Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
We're in.
We are?
Mm-hmm. Hello and welcome to Mystery Team Inc., the podcast where we tell each other mysteries and never solve them. I'm Maggie. That's Kayla.
Hi.
And let's do some mysteries.
I can't wait to be so frustrated that I want to throw things.
Yay. The ceremonial quacking of the beals?
Quack, quack.
That's so close to the microphone. It splashed on you.
It always does. A cheer.
A cheer.
Okay.
Who goes first?
I do, because I realized that you've gone first the last...
Every time.
Like, four times.
Yay.
For thematic reasons and otherwise reasons.
Great.
So, I have to go first.
Let's do it.
Okay, so, my mystery is the death of Elisa Lam.
Ah! I'm so excited.
We should put in, like, a spooky scream.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Okay,
we should put more sound effects in.
Yeah. That's what someone told me once, and I was like, you don't know our brand, but...
They were right.
He was right. Okay. So before I get to Elisa's death, I'm going to give you a quick history of the Cecil Hotel in downtown Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Okay, this episode accidentally has a theme.
Mm-hmm.
The theme of this episode is Hollywood, right? Or, like, Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Unsolved mysteries.
Yeah, which is weird.
Murders. Great.
Okay, so the Cecil Hotel opened in 1927 in downtown Los Angeles. It flourished until the Great Depression, and then once again became known as a, quote, fashionable destination in the 1940s. After the 1940s, the hotel began to decline. It's in the middle of what turned out to be Skid Row downtown.
Oh, shit.
So, in the 40s, it had as many as 10,000 homeless people living within a four-mile radius.
Oh, my God.
Which, you know, we've all seen, not all. You and I have both seen.
Yes.
The 10 cities in downtown.
You thought about renting there when you were looking for a studio that was, like, $2,000 a month.
Yeah, and then it would have been, like, $1,400 for a 10-by-10-foot plot.
Yeah.
Okay, so then, by the 1950s, it gained a reputation as a permanent residence and also a home for transients.
Mm-hmm. So a permanent residence and exactly the opposite of that.
Yeah, well, okay. People were living there, okay. And also transients were there, too. Okay.
Great.
By the 1950s, it had gained a reputation as, how do you say that? A residence for transients. But if they're transient, then they're inherently not residing anywhere.
Right.
Transients were there.
A stayover spot.
A stayover spot. Okay, well, by the 1950s, there were a bunch of transients staying there.
Okay.
There we go.
Yeah.
So... The first documented suicide. I know, it took a real hard lesson.
Sprung that on me.
The first documented suicide was in 1931, when a man named W.K. Norton died by taking poison capsules in his room. And then by the 19...
W.K. Norton does not sound like a transient name.
I think he was just staying there.
Mm.
He wasn't transienting there. By the 1960s, so many people had killed themselves there that longtime residents began to call it the suicide. Just not clever.
Not
but...
like the suicide hotel.
No.
Just the suicide.
They were like, oh, the Cecil, the suicide.
No.
Just poor wordplay.
Mm-mm.
The hotel also became a rendezvous spot for adulterous couples, drug activity, and prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the Cecil is where it is rumored that Elizabeth Short, the Black Dahlia, had her last drink.
Cool.
Also, the Cecil is where Richard Ramirez stayed in the 1980s.
No.
Mm-hmm. The Night Stalker.
Creepy.
So then, in 2007, the hotel came under new owners who, like, tried to refurbish it, and then the city was like, you can't do that because there's people living there, and they're all, like, low income. Mm-hmm. So you can't just, like, change the status of the building. So they did, like, half of it was, like, a, quote, fancy hostel, and the other half was the residence. And then in 2013, they rebranded it as the Stay on Main, which is what it's called now. It was also the hotel that inspired the season of American Horror Story, Hotel.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Elisa Lam was a 21-year-old student from Vancouver. She went to the University of British Columbia, and then she traveled from Vancouver to Los Angeles alone on Amtrak, and she got there on January 26th. 2 days later, she checked into the Cecil, where she initially shared a room on the fifth floor, but then she was moved to her own private room after the roommates complained about her, quote, odd behavior.
Mm-mm.
She had been in contact with her parents every day of the trip. On January 31st, she was supposed to check out of the Cecil and leave for Santa Cruz, and her parents didn't hear from her. So they called the LAPD.
Do we ever find out what her weird behavior was?
Maybe.
Okay.
So they filed a missing persons report. The LAPD started investigating. They interviewed a bunch of hotel staff who said that they saw her on the 31st and she was alone every time they saw her. The manager of a nearby bookstore said that she went into the bookstore to buy gifts for her family and she was lively and outgoing and friendly. They searched her room and they brought dogs through the building and even onto the roof and they didn't catch her scent anywhere.
Even in, like, her own room?
I don't know if they brought the dogs into the room, but they brought the dogs through the building.
Mm-hmm.
On February 14th, which is 2 weeks after she went missing, the police released a video of the last known sighting of her, which is a very, very puzzling, creepy video of her in the elevator.
I hate this.
Have you seen this video?
No.
It blows my mind that you haven't seen it. And I have it for you, and I'm going to make you watch
it. What year was this?
2013.
This is a recent mystery.
This is recent, and it was all over the internet, and people lost their mind. So, the clip is shown from the back left corner of the elevator with a partial view of the hallway outside the elevator. Elisa enters from the left and goes to the control panel, appears to select several floors, and then steps back to the corner. After a few seconds, during which the doors fail to close, she steps up to it, leans forward so her head is through the door, looks in both directions, and then quickly steps back in, backing up to the wall, and then into the corner near the control panel.
It really looks like she thinks that someone's following her.
Mm-hmm. The door remains open. She walks to it again and stands in the doorway, leaning on the side. Suddenly, she steps out into the hall, then to her side, back in, looking to the side, and then back out. She then steps sideways again, and for a few seconds, she is mostly invisible behind the wall. She then steps sideways again, and for a few seconds, she is mostly invisible behind the wall she has her back to just outside. The door remains open. Her right arm can be seen going up to her head, and then she turns to re-enter the elevator, putting both hands on the side of the door. She then goes to the control panel, presses many more buttons, some more than once, and then returns to the wall she had come into the elevator from, putting both hands over her ears again briefly as she walks back to the section of the wall she had been standing against before. The door remains open. She turns to her right and begins rubbing her forearms together, then waves her hands out to her sides with her palms flat and her fingers outstretched while bowing forward slightly and rocking gently. This can all be seen through the door, which remains open. After she backs to the wall again and walks away to the left, the door closes.
It looks like she's, like, dancing.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre.
It's very, very bizarre behavior. So, they released this footage on the 14th. Then, on February 19th, hotel residents and guests started complaining that the water was weird.
I do know. Mm-hmm. I just realized.
Have you heard this one?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you just gave me the chills.
So, they said the water smelled and tasted weird, and there was low water pressure. They went up to the roof and they opened the water tower and they found Elisa Lamb naked, floating face down in the water with her clothes, watch, and room key floating in the water around her. And they never found her phone. Her body was moderately decomposed and bloated. It was mostly greenish with some marbling evident on the abdomen and skin. There was no evidence of physical trauma, no evidence of sexual assault, and no evidence of suicide. The toxicology tests were incomplete because not enough of her blood was preserved, but they showed traces consistent with prescription medication and non-prescription drugs like Advil. No recreational drugs in her system. She was bipolar. Mm-hmm. She was on 4 medications for bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm. So on February 21st, the coroner's office issued a finding of accidental drowning with bipolar disorder as a significant factor. The coroner's report was released in June, and it stated that her body had been found naked with clothing similar to what she was wearing in the video floating in the water, and that she was coated with a sand-like particulate. So the next section of this is called, So What the Fuck? The doors and the stairs that access the hotel's roof are locked always, mm-hmm. and you need a staff passcode and key to get through them. Mm-hmm. So any attempt to force through them would supposedly had triggered an alarm. But the hotel fire escape is easily accessible and you can get to the roof from them, and some person went and like took a video of themselves getting onto the roof.
So it's possible.
So it's possible that she got up there. But the problem is that it's so difficult to get into the water tank on your own. All 4 tanks are 4 by 8 feet. They're propped up on concrete blocks. Mm-hmm. There's no fixed access to them, and the workers had to use a ladder to get into it, and the door is super heavy. And they took police dogs up there, and they never found her scent. So we don't know what the fuck.
Yeah.
I have a lot of theories, because the internet is full of crazy people. Mm-hmm. One of them was obviously that she was having a psychotic break.
Yeah.
Which is what it looks like in the video.
Right.
As someone who has had a psychotic break, not that far-fetched looking from, right. like, you know, what I looked like when I thought maybe there were aliens piloting my brain.
Yeah.
People thought maybe she was actually being pursued by someone mm-hmm. who was trying to kill her. And then we get into the Looney Tunes stuff.
Yay.
So, and I think I did these in order of, like, least crazy to most crazy, but right. least crazy is already about a 7. So, here's 7 out of 10. Conspiracy theorists have claimed that Elisa Lam was assassinated by the government for referencing on her Twitter a currently in the works Pentagon-funded project between the U.S. and South Korea to develop invisibility cloaking technology.
That's the least crazy?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have more details about this one. So, she tweeted or posted on Tumblr something about, like, oh, look at this cool project okay. about building cloaking devices. And then I found this website that was like, if you look at the Cecil on Google Maps, there's a business embedded in their building called the Invisible Light Agency. And then if, when you search the net, you will find out that they do visual effects specializing in light effects and, quote, other realities. Mm-mm. The company is mentioned in an article dating back to 2011 where it's explained what the activities of the Invisible Light Agency are. A man named Anthony V is also mentioned. At this moment, Anthony V is working as supervisor at Raytheon Missile Systems, a company that develops weapons. On the website, there's a fake login screen. I don't know if it's actually fake, but this person seems to think it's a fake login screen.
Okay.
You'll also find a logo of triangles. This person said, the website obviously serves nothing or nothing anymore. So the big question is, what project is Anthony V supervising nowadays?
Mm-mm,
Anthony V.
That's not the big question.
It's their big question.
Okay.
Everyone has different big questions.
Yeah.
And so
mine is which of my life choices led me to be drinking in my closet right now?
A lot. But I bet it starts at age 10 when we joined a theater group together.
You're probably right.
So this same person says, this is where they go way off the rails with this one.
Were they on the rails this whole time?
They were like careening sideways. Okay. And it was like sparking.
Yes.
And like Elastigirl was trying to stop the train.
Yeah.
And at this point, they just like flicked Elastigirl off and just like put it into full throttle. Yeah. Perhaps her actions in the lift are an attempt on her part to lose an invisible assailant.
Oh, like they succeeded in creating invisibility cloaking devices?
And then they sent an invisible person after her for tweeting about it. This would account for her seemingly frustrated and anxious looks at some moments, while playful and confused at others. Which is, I did not see one moment of being playful.
No.
But
here's the thing, that's actually an excellent point, coming from a crazy person, but, like, since she was probably mentally ill, it's possible that she thought she was being pursued by an invisible.
Yeah.
Especially if she was retweeting or, like, tumbling.
Yeah.
Tumbling. Like, stuff about invisible agents. Like, she may have well thought there were invisible agents after her. And maybe that's why she was acting like that.
It says, and this is fair, it might have been extremely psychologically distressing running from an invisible person.
Yeah.
Which is not, like, where's the lie, you know?
That's very true.
Okay. So, the next theory is that Elisa Lam was a guinea pig used by the government for trial of a tuberculosis test, which uses the enzyme-linked immunosorbent assay called, in short, Lam Elisa. And that's real.
I don't buy that. She looked like a human to me.
I hate you, and I quit.
I don't buy that she was a guinea pig, and that's why she was loony. I think that's offensive and hurtful.
To guinea pigs or to her?
Both.
Great. Her stay at the Cecil coincided with a tuberculosis outbreak on Skid Row, which spread throughout downtown Los Angeles. Also, it is notable that a common antibiotic used in the treatment of TB patients is isoniazid, which has side effects consistent with abnormal behavior and confusion, which would account for her erratic behavior in the elevator, even though her toxicology report didn't show any particular substances in her system.
It
was incomplete. They didn't have a lot of blood to work with. So, thus far we have invisible government assassin and tuberculosis government testing.
Okay.
This is where it gets a little Reddity. One of these theories that a lot of people talked about when I was doing research is that Elisa was playing what is called the elevator game. Have you heard of the elevator game?
Absolutely not.
Okay. So it's like on the R no sleep level.
Ugh.
So I read it because that's what I do at work when all my background actors are on set.
Mm-hmm.
I read creepy stories.
Mm-hmm.
So I know of the elevator game. The elevator game is supposed to transport you to an alternate dimension.
I don't like this. I'm never getting in an elevator ever again.
No, it's fine. It requires really specific things.
Okay.
All of which I will tell you right now.
Mm.
So, it requires one building at least 10 stories high with an elevator. Only one person can play at a time. You can only perform this ritual in a building at least 10 stories high. You cannot proceed otherwise. Enter the elevator from the first floor by yourself. If anyone gets on, then understand that you cannot continue from the first floor and wait until the elevator can be taken alone. Press the button for the fourth floor. Do not get out when the elevator reaches the fourth floor. Stay in the elevator and press the button for the second floor. Do not get out when you reach the second floor. Stay on the elevator and then press the button for the sixth floor. Do not get out when you reach the sixth floor. Remain in the elevator and press the button for the second floor. Do not get out when you reach the second floor. Stay on the elevator and press the button for the 10th floor. Some have reported hearing a voice calling to them on the second floor during this middle section of the ritual. Do not reply. Do not answer in any way. Do not get out once you've reached the 10th floor. Stay on and press the button for the 5th floor. It has been reported by some that a woman may enter the elevator on floor 5. She may appear as a stranger who wishes to engage with you. More importantly, she may appear as someone you know. It is important that you do not acknowledge her in word or glance. If the elevator you are in is reflective, then stare at the floor or the buttons only. Now press the button to the first floor. If instead of going towards the first floor, you begin to ascend to the 10th, then you have performed the ritual correctly. However, and this is very important, if you instead do descend to the first floor, then you have done something wrong. Get off on the first floor immediately. If the woman is on the elevator, then remember not to acknowledge her. If you reach the 10th floor, you can either stay on the elevator or exit the elevator. Some have reported that upon attempting to leave the elevator, the woman will try one last time to engage with you. She may raise her voice and ask where you're going or what's wrong. She may shriek as you cross the door's threshold. Keep your wits about you and do not engage or look at her even out of fear. There is only one way to know whether you have traveled to the other world for sure. You will know because you will be the only person there.
No, creepy.
So that's the elevator game.
Okay, I don't like that.
Me neither. It's spooky. So here's the last and best and looniest theory.
Okay.
And it involves our best baby boy, Aleister Crowley. I know. And it is so silly and so ridiculous. Okay, so. Did you know that the Cecil Hotel has a twin in London?
Mm-mm.
It does. Mm-hmm. It's called the Cecil Hotel, and it's in London. It was built in 1886, and then it was torn down in 1930. It was no rooming house for outcasts. It was, in fact, a luxury hotel accommodating corporate power and the global elite. It was named after Sir Robert Cecil, the Earl of Salisbury, and the treasurer to James I, who lived on the property. And the Cecils were the power behind the throne of Queen Elizabeth I. The hotel had its own built-in Masonic hall.
I love this.
So it was a favorite meeting place for many Freemason lodges in the London area, including those noted for worshiping Lucifer. So Aleister Crowley stayed at the Cecil.
Mm-hmm.
While he was staying there, he was introduced to George Cecil Jones, who was a member of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. Our favorite. Jones introduced Crowley to the Book of the Sacred Magic of the Abramelin the Mage, and Practical Magic, his favorite. So, on November 18th, Crowley was still staying at the Cecil, and he was initiated into the Outer Order of the Golden Dawn by its prestigious leader, Samuel Little MacGregor Mathers. Also, while he was staying there, Crowley wrote a bunch of poetry. In particular, he wrote one called... Okay, it's spelled J-E-P-H-T-H-A-H.
Jephthah,
that's what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, in particular, one called Jephthah, which has been cited by conspiracy theorists as somehow foreshadowing Elisa Lam.
No.
Mm-hmm. The poem tells of Jephthah, a judge of Israel, who ended up burning his daughter as a sacrifice. The daughter's name was Seila, S-E-I-L-A, which is an anagram for Elisa, which already feels like a reach, you know? Here's the poem. Let my lamp at midnight hour be seen in some high lonely tower, where I may oft outwatch the bear with thrice great Hermes or Unsphere. I don't want the spirit of Plato to unfold what worlds or what vast regions hold the immortal mind that hath forsook her mansion in the fleshy nook. And of those daemons that are found in fire, air, flood, or underground, whose power hath a true consent with planet or with element, sometime let gorgeous tragedy in sceptered pall come sweeping by.
That doesn't rhyme.
No. And then it says, Il Penseroso. Il Penseroso, which translates to The Serious Man, is just a sad poem by John Milton.
Okay.
It doesn't come into play again, but I wanted to look it up because I would have asked you. So that's like what people think ties Aleister Crowley to Elisa Lam, which is nonsense.
Yeah.
He also, at one point, claimed to have met a being that is, he describes as looking similar to the Greys.
Mm-hmm.
named Lamb, spelled the same way, L-A-M.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's believed that after his interaction with Lamb, Crowley used a magical ritual to open a portal of entry between Lamb's dimension and ours, which is of interest if you think Elisa was playing the elevator game.
Creepy.
And that's the last looniest theory.
None of the theories were murder, right?
No.
Copy.
I mean, like, maybe. Some people think that she was murdered by a hotel employee because how else would she get on the roof? Right. But it's also, like, if you're having a psychotic break, you can climb it.
Oh, I just absolutely... And also, you know, like, I think that, like, you... There's, you know, like, when the brain is under, like, great duress, you, like... You know, like moms lifting cars off babies. Mm-hmm. Like, you get you can have super strength, basically.
You can climb into a water tower.
I think that she probably was trying to hide from something. Mm-hmm. I think she was hallucinating. I think she crawled up the fire escape, and then I think she was trying to hide from it, and she climbed into the water tower and just sat in there, hiding.
And then, but then why was she naked and face down?
Well, she probably took her clothes off at some point because she was whatever. Hallucinating that she so needed weird. To for some reason. There was no evidence of sexual assault and no, like, wounds or anything, right? Mm-mm. Yeah, I think she just went, got loony and fell asleep in there.
Oh, yeah, I wonder if she literally fell asleep.
I think she was just hiding in there so long she fell asleep and drowned.
I didn't consider the idea that she might have fallen asleep.
I mean, if you were hiding from something up there.
That's so scary.
Especially if she'd been, like, awake for days, like...
Yeah, if you're having a manic break, you're not sleeping. Mm-hmm.
And if you're on, like, a bunch of... I know, me too.
And she wasn't taking her medication.
Oh, she wasn't taking it?
Well, it was in her system, but in, like, you know... If she was hiding in the water tower, she missed at least one dose.
Yeah, right.
And even one will make you feel
weird. She may have missed a dose before that.
Yeah, it was in her system, but, like, that doesn't mean anything.
No, but, I mean, most of those, the half-life of them is long enough to be significant.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't, you the effects would wear off, but the chemicals would still leave trace in your system. You know what I mean? Like, even Prozac, like, you start feeling the effects of not taking it the first day you miss a dose, but it stays in your system for, like, 2 days.
Yeah.
Creepy.
Poor baby. I thought I was going to end this, like, laughing at Aleister Crowley and the crazy people on the internet. But I'm really just, like, want to give her a hug.
Yeah, I'm sad for her.
That could be me.
Yeah, that could be any of us that have had... ended up in the psych ward.
Yeah. Luckily, my psychotic breaks usually end with me just not leaving my bed.
Smart.
Which is safer than going to a hotel for 1940s transients.
Yeah.
So that's Elisa Lamb.
Well, I feel for her. I really do. Mm. It's hard. I mean, mental illness is super hard. You and I talk about it all the time because we're both very open about our mental illness. But yeah, it's just.
Yeah, it's so scary to be so far away from your parents and, like. Mm-hmm. Have a psychotic break.
Be so especially out of touch
if
with
you're
reality.
Already medicated.
Yeah.
And she was, like, brought her medication with her, so clearly she was at least taking it sometimes. That's right. Scary, though, when that shit fails you. Mm-hmm. I was medicated when I thought aliens were piloting my body, so. Mm-hmm. Thanks for nothing, Wellbutrin. Except for, like, 3 years of stability, but then. After that, it became alien pods.
I bet.
That was fun.
All right.
Fun thing.
Should we take a break?
Yeah.
Let's take a break.
Okay.
We're back. The second cracking, the ceremonial cracking of the second beer.
You got there.
Yay.
Cheer.
Hooray. I figured out why that story is so scary.
I would like to hear.
And I think it's because, not everyone, but I think a lot of us have, like, intrusive thoughts sometimes. And I think I definitely know for me with my anxiety, like one of my fears is like losing control of my own mind.
Yeah.
And I learned something recently in my journey of like trying to learn to live with my anxiety, which is that everyone has thoughts like that. Everyone has thoughts like, what if I mean, I love cats, so this is not me, but like sometimes people look at a cat and be like, what if I just threw that cat in a trash can? Or like, what if I just ran out in front of that car?
I have that constantly.
Yeah.
Like, what if I just drove him to the other side of the street?
People have those thoughts all the time. And like, I think that they're really scary to have because then you think like, what if I lose control and I do something like that? And the truth is that like, they're just thoughts. Like everyone has them. So there was a study that someone did with people who have OCD and then people who don't have OCD. And whenever they had like a negative intrusive thought about like, well, what if my family dies? Or what if like something bad like that? Or like, what if I kicked that cat? Or like, what if I, whatever. They were supposed to like push a button on this like pager and it would record how often they had those thoughts. And it turned out that people without OCD, because with OCD typically and panic disorder too, like you have those thoughts all the time and it's scary. They found out that people with OCD and people with panic disorder had those thoughts the same number of times that people without those disorders had them. It's just that people with OCD and people with panic disorder, people with anxiety dwell on them.
Yeah.
But apparently everyone has thoughts like that. So
I have that where I'll think, like, what if, you know, you or Becky or something, like, not my parents, but cut that part out, but, like, you know, like, what if someone dies?
Yeah.
But then my brain, like, walks me through the scenario of how it would feel, and I have to, like,
It's like, because you're dwelling on it, because everyone has those thoughts, like, what if my best friend died? What if my mom died? What if my cat died? Like, and I remember when I was in college, when I first got Olive, I was constantly in fear that like she would somehow get hurt or die and it would be my fault. I think that that's like a very, apparently it's a very normal thing, but those with anxiety and with like panic disorders and OCD, like we dwell on them a lot. And that makes us feel like at any point we could go crazy and do something like insane. And so I think that's why that story is like extra scary to us, especially with dealing with our mental health issues, because we fear like ending up, you know, having the same fate. But the truth is, like, everyone has those thoughts, and they're normal. The trick is just to learn to say, like, that's a thought I had, and let it go, and not dwell on it.
Yeah.
So, super interesting stuff. I'm going to do a mystery now. And my mystery is another Hollywood. Mine is a murder. So, Edward L. Doheny Sr., first struck oil in Los Angeles in 1892.
Like, of Doheny, the street?
Yeah. And
my mom is going to love this. If she listened to it, she would love it.
She would like it.
Today on the phone, I was like, I'm about to go record with Maggie, and she was like, okay.
Thanks for your support, Mom.
Thank you.
My mom listens to our podcast now, and it's so funny, because when she hears something, sometimes she'll, like, call me and be like, I remembered when D.B. Cooper happened.
I was there.
It's great.
I love that. Thank God we have your mom.
It's true. Edward L. Doheny Sr. first struck oil in Los Angeles in 1892 and quickly became one of the richest men in the world. He was a rival of John D. Rockefeller, and by the 1920s, the Doheny's owned all the land now known as the Truesdale Estates and the adjacent Doheny Drive properties, which is now an incredibly affluent neighborhood in Beverly Hills that extends up into up against the Santa Monica Mountains. At the time, Sunset Boulevard at Doheny was literally a path used for horseback riding.
And now it's a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, horses.
It's their fault. E.L. Doheny Sr. developed relationships with many politicians, including then-President Warren G. Harding. His Secretary of Interior was named Albert Fall, and Doheny Sr. once gifted Albert Fall $100,000, which is $10 million in today money.
For what?
As a gift. To say thank you for the lovely gift, Secretary Fall made it possible for Doheny to secure oil drilling rights to a large deposit of oil on federally owned lands, particularly one rich one, which was called the Teapot Dome.
I see what you sneaky white male motherfuckers did.
The $100,000 cash bribe to the Secretary of the Interior,
there we go,
had been hand-delivered in a black valise by Mr. Doheny's only living child, Ned, who was then in his late 20s, along with his assistant, Ned's assistant, who had been his boyfriend. Along with his,
I like this story better if they're boyfriends.
The $100,000 cash bribe to the Secretary of Interior had been hand-delivered in a black valise by Mr. Doheny's only living child, Ned, who was then in his late 20s, along with Ned's assistant, who had been his boyhood friend, Hugh Plunkett.
Hugh Plunkett and Ned.
Yeah.
Government shills.
In the 1920s, Doheny Sr. gifted 16 acres of land for his son Ned and his wife Lucy to build their dream home. February 15th, 1927, construction began on a 55-room, Tudor-style home, 46,000 square feet on 16 acres of land. At the time it was built, it cost over $4 million, and it was the most expensive home built in California up to that time.
$4 million in...
then money.
So what is that now?
I don't know. Like, a lot.
Good math.
But it quickly became second because Hearst Castle was under construction at the same time.
Good. I don't like these people.
I know. Ned and Lucy had a hand in designing the interior, and the head architect, Gordon Kaufman, is most notably known for his work on the Hoover Dam. The home was dubbed Greystone Mansion after the unfathomable number of gray stones used to build it. It had stables, athletic facilities, tennis courts, gyms, swimming pools, a screening room, a ballroom, bowling alleys, and a secret Prohibition-era bar in the billiard room.
What year was this? 27?
Yeah, it was completed in 1928.
What are they screening? All three movies ever made?
Yes. Just that one train one.
What's that racist one? Where they're in blackface?
That's a lot of them.
I know.
That could be anyone.
The main, most famous one. Birth of a Nation.
Yeah. Song of the South.
This is our screening room. And we show Birth of a Nation here.
It even had its own switchboard and telephone system. Mm-hmm. It had marble steps in the grand entryway, hand-carved woodwork. Later generations of Los Angelinos called it Dragon Wick after the movie that was said to have been inspired by the property.
What is Dragon Wick?
I don't know. We're going to have to watch it.
Great.
Construction was completed in 1928, and Ned, Lucy, their five children, and 15 members of staff moved in.
Hugh Plunkett?
He lived in an apartment in Hollywood.
He really got the short end of that stick.
During the construction of the mansion, and in the months after, he gets the short end of the whole stick.
Oh, Hugh.
During the construction of the mansion, and in the months after its completion, the Teapot Dome scandal unfolded. After Albert Fall suddenly got rich and Doheny Sr. suddenly got the rights to drill for oil on federal land, everyone came under investigation.
Great.
Albert Fall was convicted of accepting a bribe from the oil tycoon. He was the first cabinet member to ever be imprisoned. Doheny Sr. was under investigation, and because Ned and Hugh had delivered the bribe money by hand, they were also under investigation as accomplices. Ned and Hugh had been called to testify in the upcoming Ned and Hugh had been called to testify in the upcoming bribery trials of Albert Fall and E.L. Doheny. And although Ned had been assured immunity, Hugh had not.
No.
On the night of February 16th, 1929, Hugh Plunkett arrived at the Greystone Mansion. He used his passkey to enter the home and went to the guest room on the first floor where he frequently stayed. He called Ned from the switchboard, and Ned came to the guest room to have a discussion with him. Lucy was sitting in the library reading magazines alone when around 11 o'clock at night, she heard a single gunshot ring out from the east wing. Instead of calling the police, she called the family doctor, E.C. Fishbaugh, who was paged by his maid while out at the theaters. He quickly came to Greystone Manor, arriving around 11:30. The pair made their way to the east wing, where they found Hugh standing outside the bedroom door holding a gun. He told Lucy and the doctor to stay away, slammed the door, and then another single gunshot rang out. The two entered the bedroom to find Ned dead from a gunshot wound to the head and Hugh dead of apparent suicide. Around 2 a.m., they called the police.
Huge question mark, huge eyebrow raise.
Here's why we're pretty sure that's not how it happened. Ned had gunshot residue on his head, meaning the gun couldn't have been more than a few inches away from his head when it was fired. And Hugh, he was shot from behind. He was found face down with a half-finished cigarette in his hand. By the time the police arrived, several hours later, it was apparent that the bodies had been moved. Lucy and the doctor claimed that they moved the bodies when the doctor attempted to revive them. Speaking with the staff, all of their stories were exactly the same as if they had been rehearsed. The deaths were ruled a murder-suicide.
It was Ned, Hugh murdering Ned.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And E.L. Doheny Sr.? The Senate was so sympathetic to his grief that the investigation into his bribery of the Secretary of the Interior was called off entirely.
Of course it fucking was.
God, Lucy,
damn, I'm already mad.
Lucy remarried 5 years after her husband's death, almost to the day, to an investment banker.
Mm-hmm.
They eventually sold the house and moved into a smaller home.
What was his name? Tripp?
Yeah. She lived to be over 100. In her twilight years, she apparently got up every morning, got dressed for a lunch date, and would sit in a winged back chair facing the window with her handbag, just waiting for something.
What? Did she specifically say, like, I'm going to a lunch date?
No.
I have so many questions, and I know you're not going to answer them, and I'm already mad at you.
Now we can discuss theory a little bit before I move on. At the time, like, the newspapers went crazy because there was, like, this millionaire, like, heir who had been murdered, supposedly, and there were all these rumors that swirled that they had been lovers and that it was, like, a lover's spat. Then there was also a theory that Lucy killed both of them because they were lovers.
Oh,
that she got jealous and killed them. The forensic evidence looks like Ned shot Hugh and then shot himself. My theory is that because Hugh did not have immunity in the trial, Hugh was going to come out and be honest or try to make a deal.
That's what I thought.
And that Ned didn't want him to.
Yeah.
And so they decide. And then Ned killed him to keep him from, you know, like, telling the truth, and then turned the gun on himself because he felt so guilty about what he'd done because they were childhood friends.
Hmm.
It's unlikely that they were lovers, but that's also possible. And that would also, like, further explain why he would, like, kill himself after killing Hugh.
Yeah, it's the him killing himself that I'm hung up on.
Mm-hmm.
But
another thing is that Greystone Mansion had a gun room that Ned had built, where it's like the racks were, like, built into the walls, and he would sit in this big bay window at the front of the property and have his servants release, like, pre-stocked game for him and shoot them from the window and then have the servants go pick them up and prepare them for, like, dinner or whatever. And in the Greystone Mansion, there was, like, a grooved countertop specifically for that.
This is the grossest rich white dude shit I've ever heard.
I know.
I can, like, see his closet full of pastel polos.
I know.
Khakis and boat shoes and murder.
So everyone's, like, pretty convinced that they paid off the police, obviously, and that probably Ned killed Hugh.
Mm-hmm.
And then the gun was, because of the gun residue, it could not have been more than an inch from his head when it was fired. So either Lucy fired it or he fired it.
Yeah,
And Lucy, much to your dismay, went to her grave never telling a soul anything. Never deathbed confessed.
I will say it every episode if I have to. Confess on your deathbed. I'm going to. It might even be a lie, but...
By the way, Greystone Manor, or mansion, was set to be subdivided and demolished until the city of Beverly Hills stepped in, bought it, and added it to the Historical Places Registry. It's been used in several films, including The Big Lebowski, Spider-Man 3, and Witches of Eastwick.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It's like a filming location. By the way, it's super haunted. Ned's daughter had her own room. She frequently had little friends stay over, and in 1936, during the night, this is after, I didn't mention this earlier, he was murdered 5 months after they moved into the home.
Okay.
In 1936, during the night, one of her friends fell out of the bedroom window to her death.
Quote unquote fell.
Yeah. Apparently, the house has been investigated by paranormal scientists on many occasions, and two rangers have quit because of their paranormal experiences at the mansion.
Do they have any kind of testimony?
There is a tape of an incident that occurred during the filming of National Treasure: Book of Secrets.
I might cry.
One evening after shooting, the sound man decided to leave his equipment on all night to see if they'd catch anything on tape. Sure enough, in the middle of the night, there was a loud noise, a gunshot maybe, followed by something tipping over and the sound of something being dragged across the floor. When Steve and the crew returned the next morning, there was no evidence of anything untoward, and neither the alarm nor the set had been disturbed. That's super interesting because when Ned was found, his chair was tipped over backwards, and he had a whiskey glass in his hand.
I don't know if you can tell, but I'm near tears.
That tape is out there somewhere.
I want it so bad.
I know. Now, the grounds of the mansion are a park open to visitors.
And that's where we're going next weekend.
The interior of the mansion can be rented for events, but it's closed to the general public. And we're going there.
We're going.
The grounds are open 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And then from January through June, monthly Sunday concerts in the mansion, called Music in the Mansion, are followed by Meet the Artist receptions and a tour of the first floor of the Greystone Mansion. Tickets are $20.
We're going.
They start in January.
We're going.
Are you so excited?
I am tearing up. I am so excited. This has everything I love. Los Angeles, national treasure, spooky stuff caught on sound equipment.
Murder.
Concerts.
Yeah.
I don't really like concerts.
Betrayal.
So much. Betrayal. Lovers?
Oil tycoons?
Oil tycoons. Bribery.
The thing is, that house, that property, and the house was built with, like, dirty oil money.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that shit's fucking haunted. Okay.
So, let's have an answer.
Let's five steps of solving a mystery this.
Okay.
Qui bono.
No. Step one. What happened?
Identify.
What is the mystery? Check.
Great. Got it. Well, I think you made a good point, which is, like, the real mystery is, like, why did Ned die?
Yeah,
Because I understand why he would have killed Hugh. But I don't fully understand why Ned had to die.
I don't either. And I don't buy necessarily
that it was suicide?
That it was suicide out of guilt. Because Because
he didn't seem like he was guilty for any other fucked up things he did?
Yeah, it's like he's led a life of being a shitty rich white dude. Like, why would all of a sudden now, after already having screwed over his possible lover / best friend, like, why would this...
People did say of him, they were like, he was super spoiled, but they said that he, like, had a heart of gold.
No, I don't buy that. Who said that? Other rich white
other
guys?
Rich white
no.
Guys probably, yeah.
No. People say that about not our president.
Here's the thing. Yeah, good point. Here's the thing, though, too. Like, Lucy heard a gunshot ring out, and she didn't call the police. And she also didn't go investigate. I don't buy it. She called the doctor, waited for him to get there, and then went.
No, I don't buy that for one second. I also don't buy that she didn't go look.
Mm-hmm.
I'm frustrated. Okay, step two.
Qui bono.
No, step two is
the only one I care
identify
about is
people
to make sure the mystery is real.
Oh, right. Verify the mystery.
It's definitely real.
Okay, so step four. Who better fit? Are we on four?
No.
What are we on?
Three.
Step three. Step three. Qui bono.
Step four is, like, mysteries are hard.
No, that's step five.
What's step four?
Step four is qui bono.
Then step
five
step
is mysteries are hard. It's step one, identify the mystery.
So hot.
Step two, identify possible people of
proof.
Interest.
No, it's identify people for proof that the mystery is real.
You're making it way less complicated than it is. Step one, identify the mystery. Step two, identify people in the mystery. Step three, identify people for proof. Step four, qui bono. Step five, mysteries are hard.
Okay, great. So, qui bono.
Qui bono.
Well, E.L. Senior bonos, because he got his investigation called off. But I don't think he killed anyone.
He wasn't really even involved.
No.
But I can see that, I can see E.L. Senior telling Ned to kill Hugh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. To protect the family or something.
To protect the family, because Hugh was obviously going to talk.
Right. But you also made a good point, which is that Ned could have been, you know, drunk or whatever and killed Hugh, and that Lucy could have killed Ned. Mm-hmm. Because she bono'd.
She bono'd because she got...
She stood to inherit everything.
The inheritance, and maybe she was sleeping with Hugh.
Yeah.
Like, maybe she and Hugh had been lovers, and then...
I think that's very, very possible.
Ned killed Hugh, and she was like, this is the final straw.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And Ned wouldn't have even had to know they were having an affair to kill Hugh, because he mm-hmm. already had the motive. What if she and Ned planned for Ned to kill Hugh, but Ned didn't know that she was planning to kill him?
Oh, like she was the mastermind, mm-hmm. and then she puppeted him?
Yeah, and then staged it as a murder-suicide.
Girl.
To get her money.
Love that.
That explains why she was sitting in a fucking chair for the rest of her life, waiting for Judgment Day to come. In her twilight years, she would get up every morning, get dressed for an imaginary lunch date, and then sit in a wingback chair in her home facing a window with her handbag next to her just waiting for something.
So fucking weird.
A lot of people think that she was just, like, waiting for Judgment Day, essentially, that she was just, like, so racked with guilt.
Yeah, but, like, don't be racked with guilt. Ned was clearly a piece of shit.
Right. I mean, we don't know.
Yeah. I imagine it as, like, she hears the gunshot, she runs in, Hugh is dead, mm-hmm. and she's like, what the fuck happened? Mm-hmm. And he's like, he was gonna talk, and then she, like, in my wildest dreams, like, ties him up and, like, holds the gun to his head and does this really long dramatic monologue, like, in, like, a tight close-up.
Yeah.
About then, like, shimmering, like, tears trembling on mm-hmm. the edge of her eyelids, mm-hmm. and she's like, he was my lover, and he gave me more than you ever did.
See, no, what I see is she runs in, and he was dead, and fucking Ned is sitting there with, like, the whiskey glass in his hand and the gun, and he's like, I had to kill Hugh, like, he was gonna talk, and she's like, oh my god, like, babe, give me the gun.
Oh.
She's like, give me the gun. I'll fix it. We'll fix it. We're
going to
make it through this.
And then she's like...
And then she's like, JK, motherfucker.
Oh.
She hits him in the head and she's like, he was my lover.
I love that. Mine is Oscar bait and yours is like sexy mini series for HBO.
Let's do it.
Let's do both.
Great. If anyone wants our scripts for...
I wonder for that one scene.
I wonder if movies have been made out about this. I'm sure there have been.
Maybe, or maybe the Doheny family is so prominent in L.A. that no
That's
one's allowed to.
That's actually exactly what it is. If they could pay off the police,
they
then,
can pay off.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have troves and troves.
They have the rights to
screen
the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where they just, like, gave them $100,000 and they were like, don't ever talk about this.
Yeah.
And this poor screenwriter who spent so many hours in the coffee bean.
I guess the ultimate moral of the story is we don't know.
We don't know. And stay in your lane.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.